positive energy into the universe.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 32 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by the Jenny to my forest, Brian. Brian, how are we doing today?
I would do a Jenny impersonation, but the only Jenny impersonation that I'm really capable of is, I like you, Forrest, but just not like that.
I understand.
Forrest, I've got the disease.
You pretty much nailed it, my friend.
Thank you. You know, Robin Wright Penn, very broad, spectrum in terms of her acting skills that I don't think any of us saw possible until House of Cards.
I don't know. I think you saw it before. I think Sean Penn was just holding her back. So I think when she went back to being just Robin Wright, it was a good move for her.
I think it's a good move for most people to get away from Sean Penn, with the exception of El Chapo. His life has dramatically gone downhill since he was last spotted in the company of Sean Penn.
And did I tell you I'm thinking of killing off that bit at the end of the year where I compare you and me to some kind of random pop culture reference?
No.
I feel like it's kind of run its course.
Do you remember what last year's was?
What last year's what?
The pop culture reference.
Last year or last week?
No, last year.
Last year?
Like,
I don't know.
Where were we when we started, when you started doing it? I believe you started doing it in late November, early December of 2017.
Before we even started doing the podcast?
We've been doing this podcast for 25 years. Don't you remember when we announced it? Gosh, come on. You got to keep up with this.
Sorry. Well, let's, before it cools off, let's get into Drink of the Week this week. Which I crushed it this week. Just totally crushed. Blew away. Whatever. What was your drink again?
I put up the warmed old fashioned.
Oh, yeah. That looked horrible. I don't see how anybody got behind that.
Well, I believe I got two votes.
Right. Yourself and I think maybe a burner account that you have.
I do not have a Facebook burner account. You have my word on that.
All right. I believe you. So anyway, hot buttered rum beat out the warm old fashioned. I don't know what you used. I looked up a recipe online. So in mine, I've got butter, obviously, brown sugar, honey, cinnamon, nutmeg, clove, rum, and then topped off with hot water.
Okay. I went, recipe I went with has water, butter, brown sugar, cinnamon, nutmeg, cloves, salt, and then the dark rum.
There is a little dash of salt in here, too. I think I think this is going to be a bit too sweet with the honey. I think your recipe, how is it over there?
Quite tasty.
Let me see here.
Though I will say that next time I make this, definitely not going to use cloves.
I mean, it's good.
I forgot how much I dislike the flavor of cloves.
Really? Is that from all the clove cigarettes you smoked during college?
It was a phase. I was trying to fit in with a certain type of group on campus, and I thought that would bring me closer to them. That would make me part of the gang. It did not, which, much to my chagrin, and in all honesty, left me smelling poorly.
Well, I will say it's tasty. I mean, it's basically like a rum cake without flour and baking powder.
Correct.
But I will say the honey in this recipe definitely makes this way too sweet. This is like a dessert drink now. I mean, I'm going to drink it because it's still pretty good, but I would go probably with your recipe, nix the honey.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
What were the quantities that you had to use?
So it was a third of a cup of brown sugar, an eighth of a cup of honey.
Wow. Mine only went for a quarter of a cup of brown sugar.
Okay. See, mine.
Yours is way sweeter.
Yeah.
You had more sugar and then you tacked on honey.
And then I threw some honey in there.
Well, that's because you've always been a little sweet on me.
Aww. I'm probably going to slip into a diabetic coma at some point.
It's okay.
It happens. You'll just have to carry it from there. So I would say this is a successful drink of the week this week, don't you?
I would agree with you. This is something that I could definitely see myself enjoying on a cold winter night.
So, again, these were our suggestions. We are dying for your suggestions out there. I mean, not dying, but...
Yeah. I don't know about dying. That's not... I mean, I think we put it out there to the audience. We put it out there to the audience to throw in suggestions, and it didn't work out for me. Because I felt that that our listeners, in terms of, and I'm not saying all of them, we got some very genuine responses that happened to have not succeeded in the Drink of the Week poll. I think the Vodka Gimlet died a slow death about four times. But I definitely felt like it reached the point where people were looking up more and more exotic drinks to basically torture us.
Kind of test our abilities or maybe bankrupt us by having to buy multiple ingredients each and every week.
Listen, I had to do some very disgusting things to get my hands on that elderflower and... And what was the other? There was another drink that I just was literally gave up on.
Well, you hated. Oh, I forget which one, but you hated the French 77.
I was supposed to hate the French 77. That was a punishment.
That's true. No, that wasn't punishment. That was an actual drink. The punishment drink was the princess, whatever that was.
Oh, that was the one with the egg cream.
Yeah. That was your punishment. The French 77 was an actual suggestion. So anyway, not to belabor the point, but feel free to hop on our Twitter or message us via Facebook or just tackle us on the street. Give us a drink of the week. Speaking of weekly items, it's time for This Week in Racism.
This
week
in
racism.
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 And just like that, Brian, 8 become 4. That's right. We have the results of our quarterfinal matchups. Again, some close contests going to the barbecue Becky region. It was a rematch. Susan Westwood against Hillary Brook. Susan Westwood had handled Hillary pretty easily during the regular season. This was a little tighter affair this time. But Susan Westwood, again, comes out on top. Winning by a vote, 57% to 43%. Brian, thoughts on that?
You know, my initial reaction is that this was shocking, that this was something that the people, you know, much like, very similar to the 2016 presidential election, when, you know, how could the pollsters get it so wrong? You know, how is it that the people, the public, the voting elite, you know, how did they... when they got into the voting booth, closed the curtain around them, how is it that they voted so differently than what all of the so-called college elite, the coast experts, the blue state bastards? I'll keep going if you don't stop.
I think you've hit your point.
Thank you. Yeah.
I'm still not sure what it was.
My point was just to just drag out my opinion as I was forming it.
All right. Anywho, so anyway,
the Susan, point being was yes. that I think everybody was thinking that Hillary Brook was going to just walk away with this one, coming in as the number one seed. I mean, Susan Westwood, a strong number two seed. Technically, this will go down as an upset. But I think if you really look closely on this, this was Susan Westwood's to lose. Her overt racism was what stood her, I think, way further in the spotlight over Hillary Brooks. Much more subdued, a slightly sexually charged act of racism. I think what you're seeing here, you know, is that the public are responding to overt racism more than acts that are a little bit more under the surface, like last week's Wrigley Field racist getting knocked out in the first round. You know, I think that was an instance where the public sat there and said, you know, maybe not so bad.
All right. Moving over to the David Duke region. Nathan Larson, number one seed, going up against our Racism Cinderella. Hoover City Schools, the three seed that had knocked off the Wrigley Field Races, as you just mentioned. So it was a close contest. Hoover City Schools actually was ahead at one point, but like true champions do, Nathan Larson put his foot on the gas towards the end of the week, ends up winning in a runaway 71% to 29%. So again, he advances to the semifinals. Brian, surprised at how close a contest it was at one point?
You know, I think here is what we were looking at is the early bird getting the worm. I believe that the people that were home, not working, people that, you know, had the ability to go to the polls early on in the day, you know, they were, these were people that were voting for the school districts. Why? Because they were voting in schools, I believe is what we're coming back in terms of the analysis. Then I think what you had was at the later part of the voting week, you saw the blue collar, the tin lunch pail working crowd coming in saying, whoa, listen, Nathan Larson is, this is a no think it. Let's do NL, sends him into the semis.
All right. Heading over to our Ted Nugent reason. Jimmy Taylor, you know, I was a little critical of him last week. I felt he had a tougher time with Roseanne than he should have. Came back on fire with the shutout. All the votes going to Jimmy Taylor. No votes to his opponent, Anne-Marie Messiano. Jimmy moves on to the semifinal, champion of the Ted Nugent region. Brian, I know you love Jimmy. He's your pick for this entire tournament. He came back strong after kind of a wishy-washy showing in the first week. You must be feeling proud of your boy.
Well, I knew he always had it in him. It was a matter of, you know, did everybody see what I saw looking at the results this week? I think the answer is yes.
All right. Moving over to the Proud Boys region, Dale Robertson pitched another shutout. Two rounds in a row now that he has gotten 100% of the vote. And he had some pretty tough competition in the Duncan Racist. That was my pick to win the entire tournament. Now he is out. Dale Robertson into the semifinals. He is the champion of the Proud Boys region. Tough competition. I mean, I am a little bit surprised that that one was not a closer matchup. What are your thoughts?
This was just a shocker, no matter how you look at it. I thought the Dunkin' Donuts Racist, I believe he had potential to go all the way. Dale Robertson, I mean, clearly, I think what that happened here was the voting public saw the actual threat of physical violence, not just to a husband and a wife, but also to their innocent children at home. I think that's the thing that set Dale apart.
Agreed. You know, when he threatens to kill somebody's kids, it probably pushes you a little bit up over the edge. So our matchups in our semifinal, we will have number one seed from the Proud Boys region, Dale Robertson, going up against number one seed from the David Duke region, Nathan Larson. And on the other side of the bracket, we have number one seed from the Ted Nugent region, Jimmy Taylor, going up against the number two seed from the Barbecue Becky region, Susan Westwood. Brian, a little bit of trivia for you. This is the first year that all four number one seeds did not make the semifinals of our racism tournament.
I think you want to look at that one more time.
Why is that?
Because wasn't Nathan Larson a number one seed?
I'm saying we have one number two seed in there. So not all four number one seeds went in there. How much of this hot buttered rum were you drinking prior to the podcast?
Oh, I've been drinking since about 2:30 this afternoon.
I do have a question. How much rum did your recipe call for?
2/3 of a cup.
2/3 of a cup. All right. So you actually
2 cups of water.
See, I halved it, so it was 1 cup of water, and I want to say it was like probably about a half a cup of rum.
Okay.
So yours might be a little bit more potent. But anyway, our semifinal matchups are set. The final four is there, and they're waiting for your votes. So visit our Facebook page. We will have them up shortly after this podcast goes live, and you will be able to vote. Obviously, next week, we will have narrowed it down to our championship match. The excitement is palpable, Brian. Palpable.
Well, I'm going to say this. This is what everybody came, you know, this is what people come to play for. You know, nobody was sitting there saying, you know what, it's all about the first round and then I'm going to go home. I mean, we started with 16 strong racists, you know, people that had, you know, committed such vile acts across the board. From dropping the N-word repeatedly and constantly in a short period of time, people suggesting that forced incest was okay and that they were master racists. You had Jimmy Taylor, who was just—I mean, I don't even know how to put that in words. You know, it's such strong. And now we are down to four. I mean, next week we're going to walk away. But when we do this podcast in a week, we're going to have two people standing. And at that point, I think, you know, Vegas is going to have to take note into this tournament and start allowing betting at the casinos.
And you can wager directly with us if you'd like. Just PayPal us some money, maybe Venmo us some cash. We'll be very honest and above board with it. All right, Brian, are we ready to move on to Beef of the Week?
Hit me.
And Brian's Beef of the Week.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be the B-side for Tariff Man, I've decided, when we put the single out. We're just going to have the constant loop of Beef of the Week.
But will there also be the intro to Tariff Man?
Perhaps. Did you like
it? I believe that is in itself a... a diamond in the rough.
You like the world premiere bumper?
I love it. I love it.
The Ron and Brian world premiere.
Like I told you, I paid $4 for that sound bed. We're going to get a lot of use out of it.
So, I thought you paid $5 on Fiverr.
Not for that one. That was a little Audio Jungle. All right. A little shout out to our friends at Audio Jungle. All right. Brian, what's your beef this week?
The Instagramification of restaurants.
Okay.
I ate out a couple times this past weekend. I started on Friday at it's called a tap house. I think it almost borderlines on gastro pub, but... I ordered a burger, which came with cheese and bacon, and the way they served it was on top of the above the top bun, they put a onion ring, then they placed across a personal favorite of yours, the pickle.
Oof.
At which point they held it all together with one of those little wooden sticks that has a term that I don't know what it is.
So like a skewer.
Yeah, kind of. Then I stuck it down with a skewer. I ordered tater tots because I'm 4 years old, and I ordered tater tots, which came in a overly elaborate tin cup with just this paper that looked like it was a floral arrangement going on. And I sat there and said, this was prepared with the expectation that I was going to take a photograph of this.
And did you?
No.
Good.
I did not. I refused to. I sat there and annoyed, pulled out the skewer, took off the pickle, took off the onion ring, then grabbed my burger. And it just made me sit there and realize that we've reached the point now where restaurants and kitchens are sitting there and saying to themselves, it's more important that the presentation be the thing that people are going to notice about this plate, not the taste or the quality.
No, it definitely
that
is.
Bothers
it's
me.
All presentation. Like we had gone to Clinton Hall for breakfast when we were in New York last month. And one of the items, we didn't order it, but one of the items on the menu was a grilled cheese that they made with, they sliced glazed donut in half, use that as the roll.
Yeah.
And then they make the grilled cheese, but then they put the grilled cheese on like this hook that hangs over the plate that they serve it on. And so the tomato soup is right underneath it. So the donut is just kind of hanging precariously over the soup. No reason whatsoever, and just makes it ridiculously difficult to eat. I'm with
but
you
it's
on this one.
It's going to look good.
Oh, it looks. I mean, when it came out of the kitchen, everybody was like, oh, what's that? And then watching the people struggle to try and eat the damn thing, just counterproductive. That was
and that's another, and this is my second version of the annoyance, is that there is a German restaurant on the east side of Manhattan. I will not name it because I'm about to say that it's crap. My mother loved going there. So we're talking in the 80s. In the 90s, we went there, and the quality had started to suffer. I went there several times, I would say, in the past 5 years, and basically said, I'm never coming back here. The food was cold. It felt like it had not been freshly prepared. It was kind of garbage. And you know what they do? Every year after Thanksgiving, they deck the entire interior with Christmas lights to celebrate the holiday season. And there is a line around the corner of people waiting to get in so they can sit, eat poor quality German food, but take pictures of the ceiling.
Makes sense. A good way to spend your evening. So my beef this week is with driving during the Christmas season. I thoroughly feel that between Thanksgiving and Christmas, you have a group, a portion of the society that doesn't drive the other 11 months of the year, but when it's the holiday season and they have to go out and they have to do their shopping or get together with friends, they dust off the car, they back it out of the garage, and they drive extremely slowly over every single major road they can. It drives me absolutely bonkers. Like, it took me twice as long to get home from work the last two nights because people are just driving with no sense of urgency, braking in the middle of, you know, a road with no light or no stop sign. Just driving me crazy. Again, humanity bugs the hell out of me, just more so at the holiday season.
I am seeing a trend. Now, I have a question for you.
Yes.
The constant stopping, do you think that that is a function of people looking at holiday decorations? Or is it that it is people that are, because they are unused to driving during rush hour, they are uncomfortable, which is why they slow down?
There's really not a lot of decorations along my route. So my assumption is that they are overly cautious to the point where they probably will cause an accident due to their caution.
Well, that is a damn shame.
Is tonight the last night of Hanukkah?
Why are you asking me?
I thought you sound like someone that might know. All right, I thought it was. I was going to wish you a happy Hanukkah.
Oh, you lying sack of garbage.
Speaking of lying sacks of garbage, President Trump in the news yet again for being a big baby today, meeting with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Went well, don't you think?
Define well.
I mean,
because
well,
I mean,
to the
he
point.
Got across, no, he got across the point that he wants a wall, that he's made a lot of progress on this wall, and that if Congress is not going to fund his wall, he'll shut the government down.
Oh, he definitely made that abundantly clear. He apparently felt that he had the votes at one point. This was we'll play a little interaction he had with Nancy Pelosi about it.
The votes, but there are no votes in the House, a majority of votes for a wall, no matter
that
where you
exactly
start.
Exactly right. You don't have.
If I needed the votes for the wall in the House, I would have them in one session.
Well,
would be
do
done.
It. Go do it.
It doesn't help because we need 10 Democrats in
no,
the
don't
Senate.
Don't put it on the Senate. Put it
of
on.
Course.
Put it on the negotiation.
Okay, let me ask you this. Just and we're doing this in a very friendly manner. It doesn't help for me to take a vote in the House where I will win easily with the Republicans. It doesn't help to take that vote, because I'm not going to get the vote of the Senate. I need 10 senators. That's the problem.
Mr. President, you have the White House. You have the Senate.
I have the White House. The White House is done. And the House would give me the vote if I wanted it.
So I'm still trying to understand that. Like, Nancy Pelosi was making a very good point. Like, Republicans have literally controlled all parts of government for the last 2 years. You know, now we're down to the last few weeks of Republicans having control of the House. And Trump is trying to frame the narrative that he could have gotten this deal done all along.
No, he could get the deal done right now.
In one session.
He would just go to the House, he would go to Senate, he would get all the votes, even though he needs to get some of the Democrat votes.
I mean, I love, like, it's the typical Trump math where he's there and he's like, let's see here, I got one White House, and I've got two Supreme Court justices that I already managed to get on there, and I've got the House, but I don't have 10 senators. I don't have 10 senators, but I've got three porn stars, and yeah, I could definitely get this damn thing done. I mean, it's amazing.
It is, it's typical Donald Trump, which is to talk about how if he wanted, everything would go his way, but he's willing to throw a tantrum and screw up things for everyone if people just don't automatically give him what he wants.
And then he got into it a little bit with the senator from New York, Chuck Schumer. Let me see if...
You know what I'll say? Yes. If we don't get what we want, one way or the other, whether it's through you, through a military, through anything you want to call, I will shut down the government.
Okay, absolutely. Fair enough.
And
we
I am
disagree.
Proud, and I'll
we
tell
disagree.
You what, I am proud to shut down the government for border security, Chuck, because the people of this country don't want criminals and people that have lots of problems and drugs pouring into our country. So I will take the mantle. I will be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it. The last time you shut it down, it didn't work. I will take the mantle of shutting down.
So giving Democrats honey of a soundbite and basically stating that he takes responsibility, basically throwing it on the GOP now to shut down the government, whereas they usually try and frame it as blaming the Democrats.
Yeah, but he's going to change. He's not going to take the blame if things go poorly in the shutdown. I mean, if the government does shut down and you've got the hundreds of thousands of of federal employees that are suddenly unable to collect a paycheck, and the secondary wave of effects that has on the economy. I mean, if that becomes negative to him, he's not going to sit there and go, hey, this one's on me. He's going to turn around and blast Congress, blame it, and blame the Democrats.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying he's ever going to take the responsibility that he should. But, you know, it definitely is something that, you know, I think the GOP wishes he wouldn't have said.
I'm sure.
Kind of like you said, you know, there's about 3 million Americans that are employed by the federal government. A little over 635,000 of those are veterans. And Trump would like to take paychecks away from them just prior to Christmas. So, again, no concern for the average American, no concern for the working class, no concern for the veterans of this country.
The part about the meeting earlier today that I got a kick out of was that Pelosi and Schumer both sat there and tried to get Trump to shut up.
Right.
In terms of the rancor of the conversation between the two of them, they both sat there and said, we shouldn't be having this conversation in public in front of the press. What we should do is go and have a private conversation and then come out with a message to the public. And Trump sat there and said, no, this is about transparency. You know, we want to do everything, you know, out there, and then continued to embarrass himself with his comments.
Yeah. And I do think my favorite part, and I don't know if you watched the video yet, was Mike Pence just sitting there like an empty-headed rag doll while all of this was going on around him.
I thought that he looked like he had the face of please just get me out of here.
There were a number of
please
people that
just get me
thought
out
maybe
of
it
here.
Was like a Weekend at Bernie's redo. I mean, just sitting there, no feedback, no input, probably just thankful that he hasn't been indicted for anything just yet.
Hey, he's going to make a fine president.
I was reading an article the other day where someone was hypothesizing that Trump would resign just to have, what's his name, Mike Pence be able to pardon him from all these crimes that he's probably going to be indicted for. So, but do you think Pence would do that?
Yeah, of course.
I don't know. You look at how Claire turned on Frank in House of Cards, given one of those situations.
Another Robin Wright.
I know. Reference. We'll throw that
Here's the other thing.
Yes.
You know, do we want to talk about are the events over the past week in the federal investigation that Robert Mueller is operating off of? We have quite a bit of activity regarding Manafort, even more Michael Cohen. And today we had Maria Baltica, I don't know that you can't really say she was a KGB spy. She was a Russian operative who was charged with acting as an agent of a foreign government without registering with the United States Secretary Department. But she had made some very major inroads into the National Rifle Association, and using those inroads got herself to a position where she had met most of the 2016 Republican presidential nominees. And I saw a video earlier today during the news of her asking a question to candidate Donald Trump about whether he was in favor of having softer relations with Russia, and specifically names Vladimir Putin, who I'd like to say Vladimir Putin really enjoys, at the end of the day, a nice cold Baltica number 9, his favorite lager. Baltica presents Ron and Brian Podcast 2018 Racist of the Year Tournament. Vladdy, we want to thank you. Baltica, we want to thank you for all your support. I have more beer in here in this apartment than I know what to do with. Vladimir, you're A-OK in my book.
Yeah, I mean, well, first, I mean, Donald Trump said that the Mueller memo completely clears him. So
No collusion.
Completely clears him. Thank you very much. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Actually, I'm seeing now, this just came out about an hour ago, that a federal judge has postponed the plea hearing for accused Russian agent Maria Butina by a day. So that has been pushed from tomorrow until Thursday. But it does seem that she is cooperating with federal prosecutors after reaching a plea deal. Apparently has agreed to give insight into the role of her boyfriend, longtime Republican activist Paul Erickson, and her interactions with Russians who coordinated her activities in the U.S. So on Thursday now we will see, and I can already predict the pending tweet storm from our president after that happens.
It should be great.
Also, speaking of great, did you catch the Elon Musk interview on 60 Minutes this past weekend?
I most certainly did.
And your thoughts? Is he becoming the supervillain we all know he can be?
Well, first off, I did not realize the accent that he had.
Okay.
He is from South Africa, and as somebody who grew up while apartheid was still ravaging that very fine country, I have a certain, I don't want to use the word prejudice because I'm woke, and therefore it's impossible for me to have a prejudice against somebody, but I've got certain feelings about South Africans. So that was a big shocker right off the bat. Then it definitely came across as if some marketing person, some PR person in Tesla sat there and said, listen, we've got an offer from 60 Minutes. It's a short segment, maybe about 8 minutes. You know, he's going to be interviewed by Leslie Stahl. So, you know, they're not throwing out there Morley Safer. I mean, this is, you're going to get a couple softballs, Elon. I think it would be good for the company if you did this. So Elon Musk says, absolutely, let's do this. And the dude is weird. Like, he was very uncomfortable.
Right.
At times he was standoffish unnecessarily because she wasn't asking him tough questions. She wasn't sitting there saying to him that you're a danger to your employees or whatnot. But she was asking questions about how the I believe it was the T3 model, which was supposed to be the electric car for and you know, your everyman. And the price on these had gone up about $20,000 from the time he had announced it was going into production. That they were severely late in terms of delays in pumping out these bad boys, and he really seemed to just not handle it well, I don't want to say it was similar to Donald Trump and how he handles negative publicity, but it was, you could definitely sense that Elon Musk went in there looking for opportunities to make himself look like a good guy, but the interview just wasn't going in that direction. You know, like, she brought up the delays, she brought up the number of hours, she brought up the safety concerns. You know, we had spoken a couple weeks ago about people getting hurt at the production plants of Tesla's. We talked about he literally seemed to just take offense that here was somebody who was questioning him, followed by, and this is where things really went off the rails, in my opinion, but Leslie Stahl asks him about the settlement that he had made with the SEC over the summer after he had tweeted that he was going to be taking the company public at $420,000 or $420 per share, or it was $420, so he was going to get high. I don't recall the specifics of that tweet, but the idea was he sent out a tweet that he was taking the company public. There, you know, an SEC investigation later turned out this was completely false. So as part of his settlement agreement that he had made with the SEC was that he gave up the CEO role of the company and was replaced, as well as to remain as the chairman of the board of Tesla. There's a representative within the Tesla organization that has been tasked with proofreading all of Elon Musk's tweets before they go out, and to censor ones that will have an effect on the company. This was in his agreement. And when Leslie Saul asked him about it, he said, no, that's not going on. The only tweets that they need to be aware of are ones that may affect the value of the stock of Tesla.
And he also, I believe, said the SEC was stupid, if I remember.
He gets to that later, but she says to him, well, how do you know if a tweet is going to affect the price unless it's already been sent out? And he sat there and chuckled and goes, well, it's a learning experience. At which point she then came back to him and said, so are you following the terms of your SEC agreement? That's when he said that he thinks the SEC is stupid and that he doesn't respect them.
Makes sense. I mean, it was...
Listen.
And I believe...
Don't go to Wall Street and take Wall Street money and then turn around and say you don't want to play the SEC game.
Right. That's not how it works.
I can't accept. If you know, if you want to run a private company and you want to operate it the way you do, go for it. That's your business. As long as you're not violating any employment laws.
Right.
But if you're going to go to Wall Street and say, listen, give me a lot of money and I will give you a portion of my company, now you got to play by their rules.
And now he's also come out and criticized 60 Minutes for the editing of his interview, you know, stating that the edit of the interview made him look, not the way that he would have liked. He felt his full comments were more nuanced than how it was portrayed. We'll have to see. I mean, it sounds like he's going to release a full transcript of the interview to kind of prove his point. And if I do recall, he also was blaming the accidents or the reports of accidents at his plants on the United Auto Workers in an attempt to kind of smear the company to try and get a union into his factories.
Well, if there's anything that you want to do is to... As a car manufacturer, is go after the unions. That's going to be a popular call.
That always works out well with people.
It I don't think it does.
All right, jumping over to another CEO in a huge company. We're going to Google, who today, their CEO, was on Capitol Hill taking questions from the House Judiciary Committee. And the House Judiciary Committee basically proved that they were just a group of old people that don't really understand how technology works. Republican Steve King from Iowa, everyone's favorite white supremacist in Congress, was complaining about the iPhone. So the CEO from Google had to just kind of mention, you know, we don't make that product, so I really can't comment on that. I think maybe my favorite part was Representative Zoe Lofgren, a Democrat from California. You know, she was trying to kind of shoot down a GOP talking point that Google's algorithm is somehow biased against conservatives. She mentioned that when you Google idiot under the images page, Donald Trump's face pops up. And they gave a very boring technical explanation as to why that happened. But, you know, apparently if you tag photos with certain words enough, it's going to show up. And his basic response was, you know, we're not going to interfere with people and their postings online.
So basically what was happening is that they said that it was Google that was tagging Trump as an idiot, when the reality was the fact that it was the users themselves.
Right. I mean, the
very valid.
Right. And that's been a GOP talking point, not just with Google, but with Facebook and with Twitter, saying that it has a very liberal tilt to it. But, you know, the guy basically said this is an algorithm. If people post stuff online, you know, our browsers are going to crawl over this. They're going to pick it up and they're going to report on what it sees. Same thing, Representative Steve Chabot, you know, also suggested that it's biased against Republicans because when GOP was pushing Obamacare repeal, you know, anytime you Googled American Health Care Act, every article was an attack on our bill. You know, all these articles alleging the bill would result in millions losing care. Again, you know, the CEO basically responded, that's because there were so many articles being written about you guys trying to take away health care from all of America that pushed it up in the results. You know, it's what I don't think people understand is there's so much content out there on the internet, and when you piss people off to the point of potentially taking away their health care, they're going to post about it, and the more attention you draw to it, the more and more they're going to post to it and push it up further, you know, in the rankings. It's kind of like the Streisand effect, if you've ever heard about it.
What's the Streisand effect?
You have the Streisand, the Streisand effect.
What?
So you've never heard of that?
No,
it's,
never.
It's one of my favorite things. All right, so this is back, I forget how many years ago. I want to say it was like early 2000s. So Barbara Streisand, she sues this photographer, and she sues, I think it was like Pictopia.com, for a violation of privacy because there was an aerial photograph of the California coastline on the website that happened to include her mansion. Apparently the photographer of the website were clearly unaware of this, but she files this $50 million lawsuit, which in turn then brings so much attention to this photo that, of course, the internet being what it is, everybody just takes a copy of this photo before the website can take it down and spreads it around and says, oh, this is Barbara Streisand's house.
Now it's in the public domain and you can take it down. Like, she could have it taken down from that one site,
right,
but it's already everywhere.
Right. Like, before she filed her lawsuit, like the photo itself had been downloaded like 6 times, and 2 of them were by Barbara Streisand's attorneys. After the case went public, more than 420,000 people visited the site looking for the picture. And she ended up losing the lawsuit, and she had to pay the guy's legal fees as well.
Glorious.
But again, just a perfect example is if you want something to die on the internet, don't bring attention to it. And so now you have these Republican senators that don't get that. They don't get that the more that you push something and you push a narrative, the more people are going to push back and the more it's going to stay on these search engines and in social media.
Now I have a question for you.
Yes.
Is that similar to you and I telling people not to listen to our 2018 Racist of the Year bracket special as presented by Baltica?
That's right. You do not want to check that out. If anything, we would encourage you to ignore it. We would encourage you not to share the link with your friends and family members.
I mean, certainly don't go out of your way to publicize it by commenting on our Facebook page about our you don't want to like our Facebook page. You don't want to comment on any of our posts. You certainly absolutely don't want to go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review about what a great podcast this is.
Don't listen to it on various devices, you know, iPhones, computers, your Google Home, your Amazon Echo to inflate our download numbers. Don't do any of those things.
Yeah, definitely don't.
And you know what else you shouldn't do, Brian?
What?
You should not make your employees give you oral sex in order to keep their jobs.
Completely agree with that.
So many reports came out this past week regarding former CBS CEO Les Moonves, who allegedly forced multiple employees to perform oral sex on him, and apparently also had one employee allegedly on call for the act.
Ugh.
Ah.
And his wife, Julie Chen, has not left him yet.
I'm sorry. She would now like to be referred to as Julie Chen Moves.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't know if you picked up on that. Like, literally the week after he had to resign, on her shows that she was on, she went from Julie Chen to Julie Chen Moonves. But then she left Big Brother. Then she left, what was it, The View, The Chew, The Talk, The Post. I don't know.
Do you think he's paying her? Like, do you think he's got some kind of agreement? If you stay with me for a year, you get like X number of dollars. If you stay for 6 months, you get Y.
I mean, it's either that or she truly, truly believes whatever line of bullshit that he's feeding her.
There's no way you can actually believe that this isn't actually happening.
You know what? You don't know what happens inside of a marriage. You know, you don't know how people react. But I would be more inclined to say that it's probably, you know, there's probably some money involved. There's, you know, and you want to save face a little bit. You know, if nothing's been proven 100%, you know, there's always going to be those people out there that will believe you when you say you didn't do something. I mean, if there's one thing that society has proven today, there is a large percentage of the population that is not going to believe the truth, even if it's held out right in front of them.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. All right, Julie Chen Moonves, stand by your man.
And apparently this report that came out could also result in Moonves losing his promised $120 million severance package. I think would hurt him more than anything else.
Let's take this guy's money.
All right. Let's next up on the list here. We are going out to California, to the University Preparatory High School in Visalia, where you've probably seen this. We had a teacher there that, for whatever reason, decided to cut a student's hair while singing the national anthem.
Take a seat. What song proudly we hail by the twilight's last streaming, whose bright stripes and pride. Next. I'm not done. Next. Next. Did I pick you out? Oh, no.
Miss G.
So what you miss without having the video there is towards the end of that clip is the teacher really chasing students around the classroom, carrying a pair of scissors, while the students exit the class as soon as possible into the courtyard of the school. The teacher, this has got a weird name here. What is this here? Margaret Geisinger. She has been removed from the classroom and shockingly enough will not return following her disturbing behavior. There will be a substitute teacher for the remainder of the semester. This may or may not surprise you, but her teaching credentials were previously suspended on two occasions, most recently in 2016, although the details for why she had lost her credentials previously were not immediately available. Bit of a manic episode there, perhaps.
And yet she was allowed to keep going back into classrooms.
True. It's amazing what people are allowed to do when they're really unchecked.
And I will also say this. Thank that one student who was recording video of the teacher cutting the student's hair and running around the classroom threatening to cut off somebody else's. This goes back to something I believe I said on episode 4, which was that I strongly believe that everybody should be issued a body cam. We need cameras on everyone at all times. That is the only way that we are going to be able to capture the criminals and the evildoers in this country.
The only way?
Yes.
All right. I don't think people have taken you up on that yet.
The technology is not there yet. It is too expensive to run 24-hour-a-day streaming video on all American citizens.
Although I will say credit to the student also holding the phone up horizontal to get the optimum video. Again, do not turn your phone to the side when trying to capture this video. It just makes it that much more difficult for us to see.
Well, I think that's also a generational thing. I think kids today know that if they're going into taking a video, it's landscape.
Yes. Also, troubling video from Brooklyn. Jasmine Headley was arrested at a social services office. Again, the New York PD catching some flack for basically ripping the baby from the arms of its mother. So needless to say, a little bit craziness at the Human Resources Administration. Apparently, Headley was waiting in the office. The office was crowded. There were no seats available. So she sat on the floor with her son to keep him calm. For whatever reason, the people working in the office decided to call the police, and then chaos broke out. They arrested her. They charged her with, what do we got here? Charged her with committing an act in a manner injurious to a child, resisting arrest, criminal trespass, and obstruction of governmental administration. Judge also issued a restraining order against her, barring her from coming near her baby. And then she was thrown into Rikers Island pending a court hearing. Kind of serious.
Severe and blown out of proportion.
So the good thing is,
it's also possible that there's more that took place than what the media is reporting.
It is possible, but I will say that the Brooklyn District Attorney earlier today, after reviewing the video, after reviewing everything that went on, speaking to some of the witnesses at the scene, dropped all charges against Ms. Headley and also removed the restraining order. But, I mean, Rikers is like, that's some serious business. Like, Like, I don't see how you just throw somebody over to Rikers. You know, like, if you or I got arrested, we would be probably just be put in, like, the local jail cell till somebody bailed us out. But
pretty much
this woman, who happens to be African-American, gets arrested, and they automatically ship her out to Rikers.
Yeah, it just sounds... yeah, something... the system failed.
No,
the system failed.
There's no doubt about it. What else we got here, Brian? I think we might have hit all the topics on our list today. So,
well, I would like, first off, I would like to congratulate you.
Yes.
On taking this podcast and this thing that we do once a week and making it something far better.
You humble me, sir. And I'm talking
about Tariff Man.
Are you now?
I mean, if you look at the response of the public, Tariff Man, it's our most popular downloaded episode ever.
It's up there, no doubt.
It went international. We had downloads in Spain, which is usual. Shout out to Spain, España, mi gente.
Nice.
Then we also got downloads in Canada, Ireland, Sweden, another Canada. I mean, this was, you know, I will say that I think our podcast tends to be somewhat U.S. centric. So I understand that we haven't taken the world by storm yet. Obviously, you know, if our international listeners do want to reach out to us and start getting us to start talking about things that are not going on in our a more immediate area, we're happy to discuss international. But I don't know that we would have gotten all these different countries, all these downloads, without Tariff Man.
Well, I appreciate your kind words. I appreciate those people out there that have enjoyed it and have downloaded it. I do have, you know, the question is, you know, what do you do? How do you follow that up? You know, you don't want this to be like a Gangnam style situation where it's one and done. So I do have a follow up in the works.
Okay.
I'm not going to say when it's going to drop. I would just say follow the gram, follow the Twitter, follow the Facebook. You folks will be the first to know when the next hot single is going to drop. No question about it.
I'd like to know before the public.
Well,
does.
You'll know. I mean, you've got some inside stuff, and maybe our Patreon folks will know as well.
That's another thing. By the end of this month, we will have our Patreon page up and running. If you have suggestions, if you have things that you would like us to do, you know, whether it's extra content, whether it's more episodes only available to our Patreon subscribers, whether it's, you know, if you want to incorporate requests into the podcast, you know, we need to have a couple tiers of contributors. So we're going to be, that's something we, Ron and I are going to be working on off the podcast, but we're open to suggestions. We want this to be an interactive podcast, and especially one in which we are able to monetize it. So if there's money in your pocket that you're willing to give to Ronald and myself, now's the time to speak up because we want it.
There you go. Also, we are now available on Radio Public. So if you're against iTunes, if you don't like Podbean, you can also download the Radio Public app, and we are now available for broadcast there. In some happy news, too, I had mentioned the other week how we had rescued a kitten from outside where I work. That kitten has moved on from the house here and is now in its forever home. So very happy about that. And remember, people, adopt, don't shop. And also,
So I have a question. So what is this Radio Public thing you just mentioned?
It's like Stitcher. It's like, you know, it's like Google Play. It's you know, it's another venue for people to listen to podcasts through.
You know what I think I would like you to do, if that's all right, is tweet out from our Twitter account, which is Ron and Brian Podcast, tweet out a link to our Radio Public page.
All right, I will attempt to do that.
Because I just did a quick search for Radio Public, Ron and Brian, and lo and behold, what comes up? But Ron Howard and Brian Crazier.
Those sons of bitches.
Bitches.
God.
Those two drive me up the
wall. We hate Ron Howard and Brian Glazer so much. Anyway, make sure you stop by the Facebook page, vote for Racist of the Year. We're down to our semifinals. Give us some recommendations for Drink of the Week. Follow us on iTunes. Rate us. Subscribe. Pass us along to your friends. We're happy to be shared. We don't mind sloppy seconds. Get us out there. Anything else today, Brian?
None that I can think
of. All right, fantastic. So we're going to roll on out of here. Thank you, everybody, once again for joining us. We'll be back again next week with another episode of the Ron and Brian Podcast.